بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. معالي وزير التربية وزير التعليم العالي دكتور رموضي الحمود، أستاذ المستشار بالديوان الأميري دكتور يوسف إبراهيم، السادة الحضور الكرام، ضيوفنا الأفاضل باسم مؤسسة الكويت للتقدم العلمي وجامعة لندن للاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية، نرحب بكم أجمل ترحيب في مسرح حمد العيسى لافتتاح المؤتمر العالمي الثاني والذي يعقد بعنوان التحول الاقتصادي في الخليج العربي. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. On the behalf of Kuwait Foundation for the Advancement of Sciences, KFAS, and London School of Economics and Political Sciences, LSE, I would like to welcome you all in Hamad al-Isa Auditorium for the opening of the second conference on the economic transformation of the Gulf, organized by KFAS and LSE. الآن الكلمة لمدير عام مؤسسة الكويت للتقدم العلمي الدكتور عدنان شهاب الدين. Now I'd like to invite Dr. Adnan Shahab al-Din, Director General of KFAS, to give his opening address.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. معالي وزير التربية الدكتور رموض الحمود، معالي الدكتور يوسف الإبراهيم، أخوان أعضاء مجلس إدارة المؤسسة، أخواتي وإخواني، زملائي ممثلي جامعة لندن للاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية دكتور ديفيد هيل and his colleagues, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen، أرحب بكم في مؤسسة الكويت تقدم العلمي بمناسبة افتتاح المؤتمر الثاني لبرنامج الكويت لدى جامعة لندن School of Economics حول التحول الاقتصادي في الخليج. يأتي عقد هذا الاجتماع أو المؤتمر ضمن جهود المؤسسة لإيجاد قنوات للبحث والتشاور مع مراكز البحث العالمية المتميزة، وسعي المؤسسة لتوفير أدوات التحليل لمشكلات وظواهر عالمية كانت أو إقليمية ذات تأثير مباشر على معطيات الواقع الاقتصادي والمجتمعي المحلي من جانب، ومتطلبات البنى الأساسية والتشريعية من جانب آخر. لقد سعت المؤسسة كما تعلمون من خلال برامجها الدولية المتعددة، ومنها ما هو قائم مع جامعة لندن School of Economics، إلى محاولة استقراء ما يلوح في الأفق من مستجدات وتطورات وما قد ينتج عنها من آثار وتداعيات في منطقة الخليج خصوصا ومنها دولة الكويت وفي الأقاليم الأخرى بشكل عام في عالم تشابكت علاقاته ومصالحه، وبات ما يحدث في أي بقعة من بقاعه كما نعلم ذا أثر ملموس في باقي أرجاء المعمورة. الإخوة والأخوات، الزملاء والزميلات، لقد تم تصميم برنامج الكويت لدى جامعة لندن للاقتصاد ليكون معينا في توفير المادة البحثية اللازمة والتعرف على توجهات راسمي السياسات أو منفذيها لموضوعات هامة مثل العولمة والتنمية الاقتصادية والتحولات والتحديات التي تواجه الاقتصادات النامية والتجارة والأمن. ولقد نجح البرنامج خلال فترة قصيرة في نشر 14 بحثا وعقد 7 حلقات نقاشية، بالإضافة إلى مؤتمرين دوليين وإنشاء شبكة تواصل بين باحثي الجامعة المستضيفة للبرنامج والمؤسسات المناظرة في الكويت. هذا فضلا عن تمويل دراسة مسحية متخصصة استكملت حول اقتصاد المعرفة ودراسة بحثية قيد الإعداد حول السياسات الأوروبية والأمريكية تجاه استثمارات صناديق الثروات السيادية لدول مجلس التعاون. والدكتور مارك تاتشر من جامعة لندن للاقتصاد موجود معنا، هو الباحث الرئيسي لهذا البحث. لقد لعبت مؤسسة الكويت للتقدم العلمي وما زالت تلعب دورا هاما في مد جسور التواصل بين المؤسسات المحلية والعالمية وتوفير الحوافز اللازمة لبناء علاقات علمية وبحثية تساهم في إيجاد الحلول لمشكلات قائمة وتعمل على تشجيع جهود وعطاء العلماء والباحثين. الأمر الذي لم يكن ليرى النور لولا التوجهات السامية لحضرة صاحب السمو أمير البلاد حفظه الله، وهو الذي يقف راعيا مباشرا بترأسه مجلس إدارة المؤسسة. أرحب بكم مجددا، متمنيا أن تثمر مناقشاتكم في المؤتمر في إثراء محتواه الفكري والعالمي. اسمحوا لي الأخوة والأخوات أن أوجه كلمة ترحيبية قصيرة باللغة الإنجليزية لضيوفنا من خارج دولة الكويت. دكتور ديفيد هيل، Representative of London School of Economics. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, I'd like to welcome you all in the premises of the Kuwait Foundation for the Advancement of Sciences. This conference, which takes place every 2 years through a unique collaborative multidisciplinary program, global program between KFES and London School of Economics, can be looked at as one of the foundation's efforts to minimize the scientific and research gap between the academic and research scientists and institutions in Kuwait, and research scientists and institutions and their counterparts in the advanced world. The Kuwait Foundation has created a platform for knowledge transfer through long-term agreement with a number of renowned universities and academic institutions in Europe and North America. And this is one of them, with London School of Economics. Our international programs, we consider them to be important catalysts for the foundation's strategy of advancement and transfer of technology to Kuwait and the Gulf region. For this purpose, we continue to visit and assess our achievements from time to time, refine our goals and objectives in order to be able to accommodate the needs of the civil society as well as the public and private sectors in relationship to scientific advancement, education enhancement, and capacity building. Over the next couple of months, KFES will be finalizing a new strategic program plan, including a framework for prioritizing our work and sub-programs, and will launch in parallel efforts to create enabling organizational environment and processes to help us achieve our goals and objectives. We look forward to realize in the near future, hopefully, new levels of achievements under the guidance of His Highness, the Emir of Kuwait, of the State of Kuwait, Sheikh Sabah Al Ahmed. In conclusion, let me again extend to all of you our warm welcome and wish you fruitful discussions. And I wish all of you a successful conference. And our guests from outside Kuwait, I wish you a very pleasant and enjoyable stay. Thank you very much.
ضيوفنا الأفاضل، الآن الكلمة الأولى الرئيسية في المؤتمر لمعالي الدكتور يوسف الإبراهيم المستشار بالديوان الأميري. Ladies and gentlemen, now I would like to invite His Excellency Dr. Yusuf Ibrahim, the advisor at the Diwan al-Amiri, to give his keynote address, please.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. To start off, I would like to thank KFES and LSE Kuwait program for their kind invitation to participate in this conference. I would also like to seize this opportunity to thank Dr. Ali Shamlan, the former Director General of KFES, for his superior work and tremendous dedication to KFES all these years. I wish him the good health, happiness, and all the best in his new endeavor. I would also like to wish Dr. Adnan Shahabuddin, the new Director General, all the best to succeed in his new role. When I was asked to speak on this conference almost a year ago, I thought it's going to be a very simple, easy task. I have been working, learning, studying about economic development in the region more than 25 years, and I thought I will dust off some of these studies and speak to you about it. But the changes that we are witnessing since the beginning of 2011 made this speech more difficult for me. Most of the prediction for 2011 anticipated the world economy will continue to recover from one of the worst financial crises in history. But the first quarter of this year is showing that we are in a completely different trajectory. The popular uprisings and revolutions in the Arab world, the tragic earthquake in Japan, and the recent development in the sovereign debt crisis in Portugal, all are representing obstacle on the road to recovery. However, these recent developments will have different impacts on world regions, economic activities, and industries. The GCC region, which is the topic of this conference, is a case study for analyzing the impact of these developments and responses of these economies. The GCC region occupies an area of about 2.6 million square kilometers with a total population of around 40 million and a total GDP of $1 trillion. This represents 20% of the size of the Arab world, 11% of its population, and 40% of its total GDP. The GCC has 37% of the global known oil reserves and about 23% of the world's proven natural gas reserves. As a result of this abundant wealth, oil and gas contribute 44% of the total GDP, 77% of the total budget, as well as 75% of the total exports. This full dependence on oil and gas led to more imbalances in GCC economies, such as the imbalance in the labor force and total population, as these economies are highly dependent on foreign labor, which are mostly unskilled. The dominant role of the government sector also led to imbalance in the role of the public sector versus the private sector in the economic activities. This total dependence on oil also made the GCC economy continuously more vulnerable to oil prices fluctuation. The global financial crisis is more evidence of the vulnerability of the GCC economies. The financial crisis, which was mainly caused by underpricing of risk and excessive leverage, made the international financial market cease to function, according to Gordon Brown, the former Prime Minister of the UK, and also George W. Bush to say the Wall Street got drunk. I don't want to dwell on the details of the causes and the effects of the crisis. In summary, the GCC economies have suffered heavily from the impact of the crisis on different levels and different sectors. In 2009, the oil prices fell 38%, while output was cut by 10%. This led to a decline of oil GDP by 10% and the non-oil GDP by more than 4%. As well, the fiscal balance dropped by 24% and the current account balance fell by more than 14% in 2008-2009. This external shock also caused a major decline in the values of the GCC sovereign wealth funds. The Council on Foreign Relations estimated that the sovereign wealth funds with high allocation in equities, emerging markets, and private equities may have lost 40% in portfolio value between December 07 and December 08. The sovereign wealth fund also faced a slowdown in the accumulation rate, if not withdraws from these funds. On the domestic economic activities level, we saw a sharp decline in the value of assets, such as equities, real estates, and others. This led to doubling the ratio of non-performing loans to total loans in the banking sector, due to its high exposure to real estate, equities, and high leverage investment companies' loans. The GCC governments took supporting measures to protect the banking sector during the financial crisis. These measures included full protection and guarantees to customers' deposits, placement of direct deposits by government institutions, an increase in liquidity facilities, purchase of assets from local banks, and reduction in interest rates and discount rates. The GCC government also increased government investment expenditure and provided public sector jobs to the unemployed nationals from the private sector. Such counter-cycle macroeconomic policies and measures succeeded to mitigate the impact of the financial crisis, supported by the quick recovery of oil prices and the accumulation of large financial surpluses in the last decade. However, regardless of the relative improvement of the economic conditions and the near recovery from the financial crisis, there are still serious challenges facing the GCC economies. Beyond the short term, these economies are required to create new growth engine through diversifying the economy and enabling a dynamic and effective private sector that would be able to create jobs. This would require carrying on major structural changes and transformation that might carry with it social and political ramifications. Some of these challenges, one is the increasing dependency on oil, which is not only limited to the vulnerability to external shocks, but also to finance the rising growth of government expenditure and hence domestic economic activities. The break-even oil price that would balance the budget would continue to grow from $55 balance in 2010 to $105 by 2020. As government expenditure continues to rise, we expect this level would be difficult to realize unless there would be increase in the non-oil revenues. The second challenge, the disproportion of the national assets of the GCC countries, by which oil represent a dominant component of its national wealth. Currently, oil as a wealth represent 90% of GCC assets. A study by Barclays estimate the present value of the oil and gas reserves is close to $15 trillion. And the financial wealth of the sovereign wealth funds is only 10%, which is around $1.5 trillion. So we have a tilted wealth in the GCC economy. In addition, the value of these wealth components are highly dependent on external factors. The third challenge is the human resource development. There is a gap between the quality of the education system's output and the labor market requirement. A high population growth, about 3.5%, with a large component of young population, more than 50% of the population are below age 19, put extra pressure on government to provide productive jobs to the new generation. If you would allow me, I would like to propose a more favorable scenario of sustainable economic growth in view of the current political changes in the region. With the third wave of oil price increase in the last decade, the GCC government embarked on implementing long-term economic development and diversification strategies by building a niche as a financial or trade or touristic or sport regional centers. In order to execute these strategies, massive spending on infrastructure was carried out, accompanied by a large inflow of foreign labor into the region. In addition, new economic liberalization and deregulation laws were also introduced to attract foreign investment. However, with the recent political changes sweeping across the Arab world, I believe we need to reassess and alter these strategies, accommodating the voice of people and learn from the shortfall of the development experience of other Arab countries. In my opinion, there are four essential steps needed to ensure success of the GCC development plans. One, as economic liberalization is associated with political and social liberties, freedom of expression and political participation are fundamental ingredients to succeed in achieving sustainable economic development. Second, in order to ensure a successful market economy system, an effective regulatory framework with good governance and transparency is required. Third, creating mechanism to ensure the inclusion of the majority of the people in reaping the benefits of economic development. The fourth, continuous investment in developing the education system to produce a more qualified labor force. In conclusion, GCC countries must also take serious steps in coordinating their economic policies toward economic integration. Expediting the full implementation of the existing agreement, such as the Custom Union and the Monetary Union agreements, are steps toward this objective. On the other hand, the GCC countries should develop a more cohesive energy strategy, aiming to position the region as a major player in the world energy market. This strategy should include producing renewable resources as well as exporting electricity. This would create an important regional entity and would have a positive impact on the Arab world. These are a few ideas that I want you to share this idea with you, and I hope in the coming sessions we can discuss in detail some of these issues. Thank you very much.
أيها الحفل الكريم، الكلمة الآن للبروفيسور داني كوا من جامعة لندن للاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية. I would like to invite Professor Danny Kwa, co-director of London School of Economics Governance, to give his keynote address, please.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Distinguished guests, welcome to this opening ceremony of the KFAS LSE second conference on the economic transformation of the Gulf. We have already heard this morning some of the large challenges that this region, the Gulf region, faces in this economic transformation. Among them, three are high priority. First, dealing with the transition from a hydrocarbons-based economy to nonetheless an energy-providing economy, but perhaps using renewable or green technologies. Second, developing a human capital base in this, aiding this transition to a knowledge-based economy. Third, dealing with the large changes that are transforming the global economy and polity, among them the 2008 global financial crisis and the continuing aftermath, the tsunami disaster in Japan, the political changes that are even now transforming the region. And as has already been mentioned, I hope that through the 2 days of this conference, we will get to deal and engage more on these issues. In the few minutes that I have this morning as part of the opening ceremony, I thought I would pick up on one of these themes, the themes of global economic transformation. So what I want to do is to describe to you a conceptualization of how the world is changing and how the world has changed not just since 2008, not just because of recent political changes or events, natural disaster events happening in the world, but changes that have been occurring from under us perhaps are noticed for the last 3-4 decades. I want to describe one conceptualization of these changes to you that captures the large overall important impact. And I want to describe the role and the place of the Gulf in that transformation. In discussing the global economy, I try and tell people that a good way to think about the global economy is actually to step outside of it. When I say step outside of the global economy, I don't mean become an academic in a university. I mean actually step off of the planet. So here is a picture of what the global economy that's relevant for you and me looked like, how it looked like 3 decades ago. This is a picture of the world. It's a false color image of the world taken by a NASA satellite over a period of 24 hours, showing the nighttime sky over different parts of the globe. 30 years ago, your eye would be drawn to the broad swath of light that is North America, in particular its eastern seaboard, where New York, Boston, Washington, D.C. engage in both play, after-hours play, lighting up the night sky. But on this global scale, where people play is also where they work. It's also where they add value and also where they burn energies. And we see that 30 years ago, your eye is drawn to the North American continent and the eastern seaboard. The other bright spot of light that your eye should be drawn to is Western Europe. And indeed, 30 years ago, between the United States and Western Europe, these two parts of the world generated between 65 and 70% of global GDP. If you were selling anything or buying anything, that's where you wanted to go. That's where the global marketplace was. Yes, there are swaths of light elsewhere. The Gulf has always been brightly lit. The Indian subcontinent, as you move eastwards, parts of Southeast Asia, and then, of course, Japan, which has continued to be the world's second largest economy up until just a few months ago. This was the state of the world 30 years ago. And one way to imagine how the world is changing is to try and understand how this map of the world in the nighttime sky is changing. What are the fluctuations and the secular trends in the nighttime sky? How is energy usage changing because the nighttime sky is changing how it's lit up? And what does it tell us about the economic activity that underlies the play that happens at night? One visualization of this, one that's already given in the description, is to think about North America and Western Europe and then ask, well, where might be a reasonable description of the center of economic activity in the world 30, 40 years ago? Well, our eye would be drawn to both the United States and Western Europe, and we would think that the center of this activity is about halfway between them. So this map pulls out those lights, and it shows in a single black dot, the dot that's in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, about 900 miles west of Morocco, west of London, where the center for all of this economic activity was. Now, nothing actually happens in that center. It's simply a convenient description of being halfway between North America and Western Europe. But if you keep your eye on that, that and its surroundings is where the global economic activity, the global marketplace, turned out to be. Now, the construction of this single dot came from collecting observations on economic activity at over 700 points on Earth, from Kiribati, the Fiji Island, London, 50 cities in North America, 60 cities in India, over 80 cities in China. And in 1980, that's where the center for all of these urban activities and rural activities was, right here in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. The question that I posed at the beginning of this presentation is, how is the world changing? How is the center of gravity changing? So I want to ask how this dot is changing, and I've made those calculations and put them in this animation. The sequence of dots that's being traced eastwards in this picture traces out the movement in the world's economic center of gravity. The black dots show what's actually transpired between 1980 and 2008, the red dots subsequently show a projection into the future out to 2050. A few things to notice about this. While these dots begin in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, over the 30 years between 1980 and 2010, they had drifted 4,800 kilometers east to a point just outside of Izmir. Now, east of Helsinki and Bucharest, three quarters of the Earth's radius moved in 3 decades. When this dynamic continues, as these different cities across the world grow in a way that's reasonably projected, this world center of gravity is expected to cluster to a point on the boundary between India and China. That's where the global economy is headed. That's what the rise of the East means. That's what the rise of the rest means. What does this imply for the transformation of the Gulf? How should we be thinking about where Kuwait or the other economies that are surrounding the globe, part of the global economy, how does the Gulf become an input into this process? And how should it respond to this process? Okay. I want to conclude my presentation this morning by just pointing out a number of facts that might not be terribly well known in light of these changes in the global economy that we've just seen, but that are important. The first of these is a graph that shows the evolution over time of Kuwait's exports. The blue line here indicates exports to the United States over the period 1980 through the present, so over exactly the same time period that we've just seen the global economy changing. The red line shows Kuwait's exports to the European Union. We notice that early on in this sample, in the 1980s, exports to the EU were much more important than exports to the United States. But from the 1990s on, these two lines converged and then fluctuated together. That they've converged means that Kuwait is now exporting as much to the US as it does to the European Union. That they fluctuate together means that when there are economic cycles in the Western economy, the feedback and spillover onto the Kuwaiti economy is large and amplified. Because of this co-movement, there is no diversification of the export market across the countries that you export to. Yes, there can be diversification within the domestic economy as you shift across sectors, but in terms of open international exposure, this graph is actually relatively bad news because of the overexposure to these markets. But of course, from our look at what's happened to the global economy, we realize that something else might be more important. So the question to ask is, what do Kuwaiti exports look like to the part of the world that is pulling economic gravity towards it? And here, there's actually good news. This is the graph that shows the same data in the blue line and red line. And you see the blue line and the red line towards the bottom of this picture showing the very tight co-movement in export markets. But what your eye should be drawn to is the amazing export performance in developing Asia. The exports of Kuwait to developing Asia, those were never higher than exports to the European Union or to the United States for pretty much all of the modern recorded history through 1995. And then from 1995, as this global economy continued to change, the green line, which shows exports to developing Asia, simply took off. Now, exports to developing Asia from Kuwait are more than 3 times what they are to either the European Union or to the United States. Okay. And this is actually good news. Not only is developing Asia where most of the global economic gravity is moving towards, the economic cycles in developing Asia are actually quite different from the economic cycles in the European Union and the United States, and therefore provide an element of stability in a diversified global export market to Kuwait. Now, I'm going to finish up by pointing out that this has happened for Kuwait, and it's happened across the Gulf. This same picture shows the Gulf's exports, excluding Iran and Iraq, to, first of all, the United States and the European Union. The United States again in blue, the European Union again in red, and we see the same pattern as we saw earlier for Kuwait, that there was initially these two were different, but then from the mid-1990s on, these two lines converged and then co-moved in a dangerous, destabilizing way. But of course, developing Asia in the green line once again has taken off, showing the amazing change, the amazing transformation from the early 2000s on, so that the Gulf's exports to developing Asia are now five times what they are to either the European Union or to the United States. Okay. The global economy has completely transformed. It has transformed in this long-run secular way. Through the rest of these 2 days of the conference, we will discuss also an Asianizing influence in a later session. We will get to talk about global financial crisis and economic cycles in these different parts of the world and how they provide a different perspective onto Gulf and Kuwaiti economic development. Thank you very much.
ضيوفنا الكرام، يسرنا دعوتكم لحضور استراحة الشاي في الدور الأرضي في البهو الرئيسي بمؤسسة الكويت التقدم العلمي. Now I would like to invite you all for a coffee break in the main lobby in the ground floor. Ladies and gentlemen, the first session of the conference will start at 10:30 in this حمد العيسى auditorium. Thank you all. أود أن ننوه بأن أولى الجلسات العلمية للمؤتمر سوف تبدأ في الساعة 10:30 في هذا المسرح، مسرح حمد العيسى، وشكرا للجميع لمساهمتكم في إنجاح هذا الحفل. شكرا.